The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It makes no sense to me. I've been clear. I've tried to understand the reasons. Backup, gadget player, valuable position on the roster. I've tried. I've asked you, my faithful friends and listeners, why would the Philadelphia Eagles draft a quarterback in the second round? But I might just have to go to the source, or at least close to the source. How about the energy center of Eagles fandom? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. What is that energetic center, that core of Eagles fandom and coverage and knowledge? It's 97.5, the Fanatic in Philadelphia, and Anthony Gargano, who's now on the Will Cain Show. Anthony, how do we feel today?
Did you call a gloat?
No, you called the gloat. you even asking me that suggests that you might not be feeling that good. Are you not feeling well today?
Feeling well. Feeling well. What? So they can field a team of quarterbacks? So what? In fact, their new 12 personnel is going to be they should sign Tim Tebow and make him a tight end. So they can have the quarterback at tight end and one for 11. They go to 12 personnel and have Hurts be the other tight end. And then Greg Ward is your slot receiver. So you get all quarterbacks on the field. Does that make sense to you?
I was worried for you. I was actually trying to help, but I noticed as the fifth round of the draft came around, Jake Fromm was undrafted. I was like, hey, Eagles, another opportunity here. We can grab another quarterback. What do you think?
After all, Will, you're a quarterback factory, right?
Exactly.
All they do is develop quarterbacks.
Anthony Gargano.
When Howie Roseman said that, Will, when he said that, I started to think, and I went, you know, last year they drafted a guy named Clayton Thorson. Are you familiar with his work?
Yeah, because he's at the Cowboys, actually, now.
All right, right, right. How about Sudfeld? How well has he done? In fact, there's such a quarterback factory that they needed a 40-year-old ESPN analyst to fill in on the playoff game for him.
Right, right. Anthony Gargano of 97.5 The Fanatic here on the Will Cain Show. For real, man, I'm not gloating. It doesn't make any sense to me. Zero sense. Zero sense. Not the gadget player explanation, not the Taysom Hill explanation, not the coronavirus explanation, not the backup explanation. None of it makes sense at a second round pick. If you told me Carson gets hurt and we need to make sure we have a competent backup, cool. Okay, who'd you get as a free agent? Who'd you sign in free agency? Or who'd you draft in the fifth round? That's, by the way, if you'd assigned Fromm or drafted Fromm in the fifth round, that made sense to me. Okay, I get that. That's going to be a good backup quarterback.
Right.
But Jalen Hurts in the second round, I can't do the math, Anthony. I really can't do it.
Well, of course you can't, because you have sense, and you're not trying to be smarter than the free world. And so one of the issues is, again, you not only did you – first of all, Wentz has been devoid of weapons his whole time here. And you took a risk on Jalen Reagor, who I think is explosiveness, but you didn't trade up with Atlanta to try to go get and block the Cowboys from getting C.D. Lamb, which is what you should have did. You didn't do that. You didn't pick Denzel Mims, who was there, or J.K. Dobbins. You need another running back, and you passed him up. Yeah, right. For a gadget quarterback, it makes no sense. I will tell you this. I will tell you this move screams, along with some of their other action, that they don't trust Wentz. They don't trust him. They have failed to put guys around him to make him better. The fact that he's been hurt, I think, frustrates them. But here's to your point. It would make sense if you signed Jameis Winston and you made him the backup like Sean Payton's going to do. And you talk, but Jalen Hurts, and God, I love the kid. He's got a big heart, and he's a winner, but he's very, very raw. He's smallish. He's not Russ, not yet. And I don't understand this notion that, well, if Wentz goes down, you got Hurts to come in. He's a project. That makes no sense whatsoever.
No, no. Talk to me more about what you said. They don't trust Wentz. What is that? It's just about health? What is that?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, listen, they've been frustrated with Carson in and out. It has felt like it's in the ozone, and you know what I'm talking about, that they are a little bit frustrated with Wentz and his ability to stay healthy. But you gave the guy $100 million. He proved to you with guys off the practice squad last season that he can be an elite quarterback, that he can be a franchise quarterback. So why don't you just buttress him up with weapons and go to work? Who was Peyton Manning's backup, Will?
Who was Peyton Manning's backup with the Colts?
Did the Colts feel the need to go get a big backup? How about funny? You know, all that stuff about Jimmy G, right? And then Jimmy G got traded. This is absurd to go try to draft the kid's backup now in the second round. To your point, yeah. They had 3 fourth-round picks. You use one of them if you wanted to pick a quarterback, not the second rounder. It's the too smart for the room crew.
27 years old, what, a year or so into his $100 million contract? Okay, so we all agree, it doesn't add up. Now, the extreme version of this is Max Kellerman on First Take this morning. Now, Max made some interesting points. I think his logic isn't far off. He's saying a lot of the same things you and I are saying. He was in a big fight with our buddy Dan Orlovsky. He said this, and you're kind of alluding to this as well, you didn't use your second-round pick to trade up in the first, go get CeeDee Lamb instead of the Cowboys getting him. Instead, you took Jalen Reagor. So this idea of Hurts was so valuable to you that it was worth the difference between Reagor and Lamb. But then Max got to his conclusion, okay? And I can't go here, but I want to see what you have to say. He got to the conclusion, you're drafting him to replace Wentz at some point. Like, this is not, you're not committed to Wentz for some kind of foreseeable long term. Do you get there too?
Why else would you draft him? I mean, what is your, you're not drafting him as an insurance policy, right? Because it takes time to develop an insurance policy. Are you drafting him to then flip him? Now, Andy Reid was a guy who knew quarterbacks. Andy was the true quarterback guru who was in that building. But he would take a guy in the fourth round and then flip him for a 2 or a 4 or 1. You don't take a guy in the second round and try to flip him to what? He has to play to prove that he can warrant a 1 or multiple 1s. Max's conclusion is not far off.
Really? Not far off. And you talked about the ozone.
Well, judging by this, if you do the Wentz math, what's it equal? Because it doesn't equal the coronavirus thing. It doesn't equal the backup math.
That one doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Right? It doesn't equal the gadget play. The math doesn't equal a gadget player. How about you get Denzel Mims, who will help you more than a gadget?
Let me push back now. I got to be the voice of sanity for the Eagles now, all of a sudden. I'm talking to Anthony Gargano here of 97.5, the fan, the fanatic in Philadelphia. So, look, I'll be the voice, okay? You can't go where Max went. You can't go that far. Okay, I agree with you. Coronavirus, that's silly, because if your quarterback room has coronavirus, your team is going into quarantine.
It's ridiculous. They're not going to
You're
play.
Not putting Jalen Hurts on the field. You got issues. You got bigger issues. Number two, there's no way you take a Taysom Hill gadget player in the second round. For 7 plays a game, you're not doing that. Number three, I can't go with you and Max to the, okay, you're eventually replacing Carson Wentz here. What I think, this is my gut, okay. Bill Polian has said to me that the Eagles always treat the backup quarterback as a top 10 spot on the roster. That's how important it is. You pointed out a few other times where, oh yeah, well then why'd you have to pull an ESPN analyst out of retirement to do that? But it's an important position to them. It's clearly been of value. It's won a Super Bowl for them with Nick Foles. So if the position is that important and your starter is as fragile as Carson's been.
Wait, I gotta stop you real quick. Lucked into Nick Foles winning in the Super Bowl. They didn't realize what they had. Nobody knew that Nick Foles would come in and perform the magic for the 3 games that he did. So spare me the idea that was etched in stone. He was about to retire. He comes in. There was no foresight as to believe that he could play that well for a stretch of games.
That's fair. So that's really
you got to spare me that.
Okay, that's good. That's good. But I don't think it kills the analysis, though. The analysis in the end is if Carson doesn't stay healthy, and I got to win 2 to 3 games a year without Carson, it's worth a second-round pick to have a quarterback I believe could win me 2 or 3 games a year. That's as valuable as a receiver. That would be the analysis.
Well, then why not get Jameis Winston to back him up? And if you're such a quarterback guru, then you can fix Jameis Winston. He's the ultimate insurance policy.
I'm with you. I mean, I try my best, but I can't make sense of it.
All I know is that he's already shown you he can play in this league.
I don't know how you're going to cover CeeDee Lamb. That's the other thing. We don't know what he is. How are you going to cover CeeDee Lamb and Cooper and Gallup?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'm really happy today. I feel good today. I'm sorry how you feel.
When I got that text, I said, here's Will looking to rub salt and vinegar in my open wound.
Actually, it's not just CD. I liked every Cowboys pick. Every single one of them I thought was a home run.
Well, the corner, it's a great pick. I mean, the corner's another great pick that you get in the second round.
Yeah, all the way through the fifth.
That offense is frightening. Forget about it.
Forget about it. 97.5 The Fanatic. Anthony Gargano here on the Will Cain Show. Always love having you, man. See you better days.
Love you, buddy.
All right, take care.
Thanks, pal.
I gave you my best drafts in the NFL. I gave you 10 through 6. I'm ready to give you 5 through 1. Who had the best drafts? I'll give you 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 next on the Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Bubba, don't let Pat leave. Did Pat poke his head in? Mike A., stop him. Is he still in the control room?
Oh, he's here.
Oh, good. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. A resident Eagle fan poked his head in. It's not even his work day. He came in on his day off or something.
Oh, he's on his favorite show.
Oh, he's working a little Spain and Company this afternoon. Pat, Philly, losing their minds a little bit. You just heard it. We just had Andrew Gargano on the show. Are you okay?
It's Anthony. Thanks.
What are you talking about, Anthony Gargano? Did I just say Andrew?
You did.
Did I do it when I was talking to him?
I hope so.
Oh, my gosh. Andrew Thomas, Anthony Thomas, Andrew Gargano, Anthony Gargano.
Maybe that's what happened. Maybe the Eagles just said the wrong name.
I mean, who am I to criticize Roger Goodell like I did last week about pronunciations? Like, who am I to do that? I mean, granted, I know how to say Tungavailoa. And he didn't. But, I mean, I really don't have any place to be talking about this stuff. When he talked about Clavon Chason instead of Kalevon. Pat, how are we? How is Philadelphia this morning? What is the finger on the pulse of the community right now?
Philadelphia is furious, but I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah, because you're mostly ignorant about this stuff.
Okay, you relax.
You were just on Twitch watching people play video games, so what are you talking about?
Nope, Jalen Hurts
told us going into this. Let me just explain to everyone listening. You told us during our mockery of a draft last week, which, by the way, I got the most correct picks on, but you told us in the lead-up to that you don't watch the draft, you don't know the draft, you don't pay attention to the draft. Then you told us as we went into draft weekend that you wouldn't be watching the draft, that you would be watching people play video games on Twitch.
He also hated round one. It was so boring, so dumb, so stupid.
That's right. It's so stupid. It's so boring. So you feel today, from that perspective of whatever the community on Twitch is saying, pretty good. But people out there in Philadelphia who know something about the draft and who are, you know, football people – they feel bad.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Tune into The Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. The series continues this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. And listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. I gave you 10 through 6 on my favorite drafts from this past weekend. They went like this. At number 10, the Los Angeles Rams. Most people don't like that draft, but I'm liking it. At number 9, the Denver Broncos. At number 8, the Jacksonville Jaguars. At number 7, the Carolina Panthers. And at number 6, the Cleveland Browns. And that brings us to my top 5 favorite drafts from this past weekend. A little music maestro. Here are my five favorite drafts. At number five, it's the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, you're drafting number one. I hope you end up with a top five draft. I believe in Joe Burrow. I like Joe Burrow. I think Joe Burrow is going to be a hit in Cincinnati. I also like what they did after that. They drafted a quarterback for their defense. Logan Wilson from Wyoming and Akeem Davis Gaither, another linebacker from Appalachian State. I like what the Bengals did there. They also got a defensive end from Notre Dame who was injured his senior year and they say was more talented than the two defensive ends coming out. I think his name's Khalid Kareem, and that could be a value pick as well. They gave Joe Burrow T. Higgins to throw to. That could be nice. At number four, it's the Miami Dolphins. I had Randy Mueller, former NFL GM, on the show earlier. He said this was his favorite draft. I think they did a good job. After Tua, they started really protecting him. Austin Jackson from USC, a guard named Hunt, another one named Kinley. They went three times to the offensive line, and I like that. Get your quarterbacks. So I've been preaching to Nuno and to Mike A. for Darnold and Daniel Jones, and they both did it in this year's draft with Thomas and Becton. Get offensive linemen for the rookie quarterback. Miami picked up three. We'll see how many really work out. Plus, they triple-dipped on defensive line. They double-dipped on defensive back. They got value, and they selected high on each of those positions. I like what the Dolphins did. At number three, the Minnesota Vikings. Again, volume. They had a lot, but I really like the Vikings draft. They went Justin Jefferson, receiver, and then they went a ton of defense. They went Jeff Gladney, Cam Dantzler at cornerbacks. They got James Lynch from Baylor, who's just a maniac at defensive tackle. I liked Harrison Hand, this cornerback out of Temple. And they got an offensive lineman as well. I think they got all over the board pretty quality. I like the Vikings draft. And number two, the Dallas Cowboys. Every single Cowboys pick was value over projection, meaning where they got them, they were projected to go way higher. 20 picks sometimes, more, 100 picks when it comes to their fifth-round pick, Bradley Anae. Every single one, CeeDee Lamb, how did he drop to 17? Trayvon Diggs, how did he drop to 51? Neville Gallimore, 82, and on and on and on. They potentially got a center to replace Travis Frederick from Wisconsin, literally looks like him almost. I just did a Cowboys podcast. You can go check it out on the Will Cain Show podcast feed. It breaks down every one of these picks, plays a game of would you rather, what their ceiling is, how they fit in the team, and how you design an offense with that many weapons now that you have CeeDee Lamb. It's with Bobby Belt and John Owning. You should go check it out. It's in the Will Cain Show podcast. It's an hour, and it takes you deep, deep, deep into that draft if you're into that kind of thing. And at number one, the best draft in the NFL, it's the Baltimore Ravens. They draft well every year. But here they are with volume and doubling down at every single position of need. Linebacker, Patrick Queen, Malik Harrison, both good. They double down at linebacker. Defensive tackle, Justin Madubuike and Washington out of Texas Tech, double down. Even the guy they got in the seventh round, Geno Stone, nice pick. And then there's receiver, Devin Duvernay from Texas and James Prochet from SMU, double down. I liked both of those. I love the Ravens draft. Of course, that's not even mentioning J.K. Dobbins, who they got at running back. It's absolutely the best draft in the NFL. There you go. Ravens 1, Cowboys 2, Vikings 3, Dolphins 4, and Bengals 5. That's your five best drafts in the NFL. Jameis Winston looks like he's going to sign with the New Orleans Saints. And why wouldn't he? How many starting jobs are out there? What kind of categories of jobs should former starters like Jameis and Cam and maybe Andy Dalton be looking for? I got two categories of jobs. Two categories that if you're not going to be a starter, you should be looking for. And Jameis might have just snagged the best from one of those categories. I'll lay it out for you next on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today. If they were committing long-term and saying he's the successor to Drew Brees, we'd have something for the debate shows to talk about all week long.
He understands that there's not pressure to be that starter right now, and he can learn from one of the greats, which is Drew Brees.
He's not the proven answer.
I don't know that Jameis is a very safe option. It's boom or bust with him.
The idea of signing Jameis Winston, I think, was brilliant.
This is a great opportunity for him to just kind of take a deep breath and refocus a little bit and learn behind one of the greatest of all time.
I think it's a perfect move for Jameis. New Orleans rehabilitates him and allows him to have an opportunity to inherit a job. If Jameis ends up with the Saints, hand and glove. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Jameis Winston looks to be potentially signing with the New Orleans Saints. They just signed Taysom Hill to a long-term extension, but if he goes to New Orleans for a one-year deal, he gets to rehabilitate his football image under Sean Payton and potentially inherit that job when Drew Brees retires. What it highlights is, after the draft, there's not that many starting jobs left to pick from. How many are out there? And the answer is probably zero. Maybe one on the New England Patriots, but they didn't spend a single draft pick trying to replace Jarrett Stidham. Bill Belichick said after the draft that wasn't by design. They were looking to draft a quarterback, but never found their guy at the right value at the right time. So maybe they're not committed to Jarrett Stidham for the next year, and Cam Newton could find a starting job. As hard as it is to picture Cam Newton in New England. The point isn't about the particular fit right now, but whether or not there really are starting jobs open. Whether or not there's starting jobs left to compete for. And mostly you come back with no. And that leaves guys like Jameis and Cam and potentially Andy Dalton, guys who've spent their careers starting in the NFL looking for backup quarterback jobs. If that's the case, I would say there's two categories of jobs under which they should look to find employment. One, can you supplant the starter? Can you do the Ryan Tannehill deal? Can you sign someplace and within a couple of games, maybe half a season, replace the starter when he plays poorly? And then it's your job and a new contract. It's literally Ryan Tannehill's model. As Tannehill signed a big deal to remain after he supplanted Marcus Mariota in Tennessee. I find three of these potential jobs for Cam or Jameis until he signs, or Andy Dalton. The New England Patriots, we'll see how this Jarrett Stidham project goes. The Jacksonville Jaguars, although I think they're going to ride the Gardner Minshew project all the way into the ditch, meaning if he's not good, they're not going to try to replace him with a Cam, because all that would do would win you too many games to tank for Trevor. The whole point in the Jaguars project is, let's find out if we got a guy in Gardner Minshew, and there's a no-lose proposition. Either we got a guy, or we're so bad, we're drafting our guy next year with Trevor Lawrence. There's no point, really, in a Jameis or a Cam jumping in there. But it's still an opportunity. Maybe you come in, you light it up. Like, it's not winning a couple of games just enough to keep you out of the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, but you win all the games. You take him to the AFC Championship game, like Ryan Tannehill. And it's your job. So I include the Jaguars. And number three, the Washington Redskins. Dwayne Haskins had an okay rookie year, but it doesn't feel solid. It doesn't feel like Haskins is for sure going to get a three-year opportunity here to grow into his job with the Redskins. If he falters poorly, not slightly, but drastically, in Washington, a guy like Jameis or Cam or Dalton could step in, and less so with Dalton, but the others make that job their own. That's the supplant the starter category. That's that category in which to pick a job. The other is the heir apparent, the inheritee of the job. I see three jobs like that. Old teams, year of rehabilitation, then go supplant the guy when he retires. That's the New Orleans Saints, that's the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Brady for a year or two, Drew Brees for a year. I don't know with Ben Roethlisberger, but it doesn't feel long term. If Cam or Jameis or Dalton go someplace like that, play well, when they're in, maybe you're the guy they turn the reins over to when their guy retires. And then that sets up this debate. If Jameis is picking the Saints, which was the better one from that category? He's clearly not going to Tampa Bay. Is it The Saints or the Steelers? Now, Mike A., you and I got into a pre-show debate about this. For some reason, you believe Pittsburgh is a better place for a guy like Jameis to go inherit a job or spend a year than someplace like New Orleans, right?
Yeah, well, basically, what you think is important versus what I think Jameis thinks is important are totally different things. I think when you think rehabilitate your image and all that, you think the Steelers, not the Saints.
I do not. I think rehabilitate your image is the Saints. Who are you saying thinks it's the Steelers? You? Jameis? Me? Who are you thinking that's a better option to rehabilitate your image?
I do. I think the Steelers are that organization, that no fuss, no joking around, like this is the organization, the Steelers with the Rooneys and all that, as opposed to the Saints who, you know, had their issues.
Well, you're trying to rehabilitate his E to W stuff. You're trying to rehabilitate his goofiness. I'm trying to rehabilitate his football reputation. I think if he spends a year of apprenticeship under Sean Payton, the rest of the league will look at him like they did Teddy Bridgewater and go, that's a starting quarterback. That guy knows what he's doing now. Sean's taught him. I don't think playing under Mike Tomlin and, what is it, Randy Fitchner, do I have it right, is going to give him that sort of glow on his football play. It may make him more buttoned down and disciplined and no more eating W's, but I don't think it's going to give his quarterback play that rehabilitation.
I just think that I think that's what he needs to rehabilitate. He needs to rehabilitate his image, not necessarily his football. I mean, the dude did throw 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns.
I think the thing keeping Jameis out of a starting job has less to do with eating his middle finger and more to do with throwing interceptions. And I just think
that's not necessarily what I'm talking about either.
You are too. You're talking about being a goofball.
I'm talking about his Uber rides.
His what?
His Uber rides.
Oh. You're talking about more legal troubles.
Yes.
Oh. Well, I don't know what the status is of those legal cases. I don't know what the status is of any of that. I'm not sure though, Mike. I mean, being serious, I'm not passing judgment on should or shouldn't, but I'm passing on what I think is. I don't think that's what's keeping him from starting in the NFL. I think 30 interceptions and 42 turnovers are what's keeping him from getting a job in the NFL right now. I could be wrong, and I'm not telling you what's right and wrong, what should be the case, what should be standing in his way. I think I'm making a guess of what is standing in his way. I think it's turnovers over character question marks. I get your point. If it's character question marks, keeping him from a starting job, playing under Mike Tomlin can rehabilitate that. If it's turnovers, keeping him from getting a job, I think Sean Payton is going to better rehabilitate him on that. I also think if it's between the Steelers and the Saints on whose job you have a better shot of inheriting, I think you have to pick the Saints because Drew Brees is openly hinted at, signed contracts on, and had rumors about his next job, NBC, in the short term. Where Ben Roethlisberger doesn't said he wanted to step aside. We're just all kind of assuming it because of the shape he keeps himself in, his recent injury. We're thinking how much longer can he do this? I think Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, and New Orleans are all in that category. I just think New Orleans is the best one. If you're shopping in the inheritee category, Jameis just picked up the best job, and that leaves Cam picking from Pittsburgh, Tampa, or try to supplant the starter in New England, Jacksonville, in Washington. You can let me know what you think at 888-729-3776.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
This is Will Kane.
It's my job to tell the truth.
Wait, that's Will Kane's job.
I'm going to shoot this. You have to be wearing all denim if you're going to say
baby.
Reverend Blue Jeans.
Will Kane, check him out. 4 o'clock on ESPN Radio?
3
o'clock. I knew that. Totally
3 to 6.
3 to 6 on ESPN Radio.
Watching The Last Dance last night, Jordan had some harsh words for various people, actually. Scottie Pippen, Isaiah Thomas, and Scotty Burrell, who's on that 97-98 Bulls team that the documentary is about. It's the Will Kane Show on ESPN Radio. You should tune into The Last Dance as it continues this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. And listen to Jalen Jacoby's After Show podcast featuring The Last Dance director Jason Hare, available every Sunday night immediately after the show. Listen to Jalen Jacoby, The After Show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Some of the best stuff from the Last Dance documentary is the footage from 97, 98, the actual footage from those years, not the player interviews now, although there's something there. We're going to get to that in just a moment. But the footage that has not been released for all those years. And one of those moments was on the team plane when Michael Jordan is sitting down kind of, I don't know what he's adding to his coffee, but something to his coffee, and he's sitting with Scott Burrell. I don't know what year in the league Scott Burrell was at that moment, but he's flat out calling him out, talking about how late he stays out, that he's not solo. And Burrell's going, no, Michael, no, you can't say that. Don't say that, man. And then he says something like, oh, yeah, you're settling down. You got one girl. Well, not last night or the night before. Something like that. And he keeps going, Michael, stop, dude. This is on camera. And then he goes, you shouldn't stay out so late drinking. And he goes, my mom and dad are watching this. Well, then Jordan says, well, mom, dad, your boy's an alcoholic. I mean, he lays into it on tape. And Burrell panicking, man. He's like, please, you can't use this stuff. Turn to the guy on tape. 30 years later, so whatever it is, 20 years later, he's okay, I assume, with it being out. I don't know. I don't know if Burrell's okay with it or not. I would like to think he's probably okay with it because 20 years have passed. But Jordan didn't have any problem back then calling guys out, and he didn't have any problem calling out Isaiah Thomas. After the Bulls beat the Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals in 91, and the Pistons did not shake hands, that caused problems. That caused Michael Jordan to hold a grudge. And you could see it in the documentary as his eyes dart back and forth and he talks about it. You see it still there, man. He still feels it. And as the film director hands him a clip of what Isaiah Thomas had to say to explain away that moment, Jordan's like, I don't care what you show me. I don't care. You're not going to do anything. And I'm not going to see anything that's going to convince me that he's not an a-hole. And that's that for Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas went on Get Up this morning. Rather, let's play this from First Take first when he talks about not shaking hands with the Bulls.
And I think Jordan said something that was interesting in that take. He said, well, given time, you know, he may have a different opinion. And of course, in that moment when we had lost, and remember, we were champions. So we were coming down from the throne. They were ascending to the throne. And everybody's emotions are different during that particular time. While we were coming down and they were rising, during that emotional period of time, did we do everything correctly? No. Did they do everything correctly? No. But that was it. You know, we walked off. We didn't shake their hands. And, you know, if you want to contextualize it, there's a lot of other stuff that was going on around that situation. But, you know, that's what happened.
He also pointed out that when they dethroned the Celtics 3 years earlier, that the Celtics walked off the floor without shaking hands. Larry Bird walked off without shaking hands. He said, why does ours always get so much attention and theirs does not? I don't know about that. I do see some video. He does shake hands with McHale, but Thomas explains that he grabbed McHale and stopped him, and they shake hands at the end of that. Celtics, Pistons, I don't care. I think it is a weak move to walk off without shaking hands. I think Jordan's right. I think Jordan's right to hold a grudge. I think he's right to be upset. But I don't know about holding a grudge for that long. I don't know. That's 91. Dream Team, Olympics, was it just a year later? Was it 92? Guys, is that when the Dream Team was? I can't remember. Olympics, basketball,
yes.
Mike A, Bubba. It was 92, the Dream Team?
Yes.
So he held the grudge for a year. That one stings for Isaiah, if that's what kept him off. And he talked about that on Get Up.
When the Dream Team was selected and I wasn't a part of it, there was a lot of controversy around it. And I still don't know who did it or why they say I didn't make it. I know the criteria for selection of making a team, I had fit all the criteria. And that's a big hole in my resume. I wasn't a part of it. That hurt me. And looking back, if I'm not a part of the Dream Team because a lapse in emotion in terms of not shaking someone's hand, if that's the reason why I didn't make the Dream Team, then I am more disappointed today than I was back then when I wasn't selected.
Because it's got to sting. I mean, it is a hole on your resume. It was an awesome thing to be a part of, the Dream Team that year. And if that's what kept Isaiah off. Isaiah's a friend of the show. I've always enjoyed every interaction with Isaiah that I've had on and off air. It was a mistake. I think it was also a mistake to blame it on Laimbeer, which he does in the documentary. Even if it's true that Laimbeer said we're not shaking hands, Isaiah's a team leader. There's no reason to try to offload that responsibility. He made a mistake. Shouldn't have done it like that. Even if Larry Bird did it like that. Even if the Celtics did it like that. Made a mistake. Don't do it like that. Jordan's right, but I don't know about holding the grudge and holding somebody back from their lifetime accomplishments, their lifetime dreams, holding somebody out from the dream team the way Jordan seems to hold a grudge. And he does. Throwing Scott Burrell under the bus. I have a note here. That was Burrell's fifth year. Going after Isaiah. Or even when Scottie Pippen comes up and it's game seven of, I believe, the Eastern Conference Finals, and Scottie gets a migraine, can't play up to his full ability. To this day, 20 years later, Jordan doesn't seem to be understanding. I mean, he says all the right things, like somebody gave him a script on what to say, but he has no conviction in his voice. And then when he returns to calling it a headache, is that what he called it, Mike? Not a migraine, but a headache. Isn't that right?
It did sound like he said, I remember him saying, what, he have a headache? And anybody who has migraines knows there's a big difference.
He was a little dismissive. A little dismissive and still holding on to it. Maybe that's part and parcel of being the greatest of all time, being the ultimate competitor. Maybe that's part and parcel of it. You hold grudges against whoever. You are totally lacking empathy on anybody, on any of these things, until they live up to your goals. That was, by the way, a fascinating moment as well. They said all they'd ever seen from Michael was two emotions, all of his teammates, two, frustration and anger. That's it. He always expressed himself. He always had emotions, but it was those two, anger and frustration. When they finally won that championship at the end of episode four, they saw something else. They saw tears and crying with his father in the locker room as Jordan hugged that trophy up against his forehead for seemingly forever. They saw a different emotion. It wasn't just anger and frustration. It was a different layer to the human. The Last Dance, episodes 5 and 6 will be this coming Sunday. I'll have more to talk about it this week. Like Jerry Krause, he was a builder, not a tearer down.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.